So yeah, hey, this is Letter Narrative Dissidents, another update live stream. We had fun doing the last one back in December, and so we're doing another one. It was, you know, if you squint a bit, it's still probably January somewhere in the world. I don't know how time zones work, but we are here to talk about season three and RPGs just stuff. In general. Yeah, and stuff. Yeah,
it's whatever. Like.
Yeah. First off, of course, is the if you want to be as fashionable as I am, you can go to our Redbubble store and order your own t-shirts and other fine goods, including Greg's very nice No Justice, Just Dice, which is very good. Look at that incredible logo. The great souls used to. Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And
on the back of my gaming clipboard, along with you know, the best mustard I know of, and some skateboard company that seemed pretty cool.
They usually are pretty cool. You can buy that. That's up, but we do want to give a preface this by saying we are planning to do our Kickstarter for season three on March 4th. So that is
March the 4th. Be something.
Yeah. Something like that. Be yeah. Let's see here. Trying to figure out which is the best way to do it. There we go. We will have, like I said, we're going to be planning to do scenarios, supplements, and of course, core rule books, main RPG books. We love doing that. So we're going to keep doing that, but we're going to open it up to other types of books. And we'll have lists for all backers to vote on which ones we cover. And the scenario, there'll be scenarios, not campaigns, because campaigns are too long to cover. And
we might also, remember me pitching the idea of genres that, you know, here's how you do a Western, here's how you do a superhero game, here's how you do hard-boiled detectives.
And also, like, how RPGs have covered genres, like Westerns. There's very few, like, Western-Westerns. They're always Westerns plus something, you know, like, usually magic or sci-fi. Yeah. Zombies or aliens or all of them if it's Haunted West. Aces and Eights is, and Boot Hill are pretty much the only like pure Western RPGs I can think of.
I would argue for Dogs in the Vineyard.
Good point.
The retired Western.
A very specific type of Western, but yeah. So three RPGs.
Westerns, Western plus Mormonism.
Western plus dysentery. That is
nobody can afford the Oregon Trail license, don't be.
What else are we have plans for? We've been talking about, we're still working out stretch goals and things of that nature, and still finalizing our list of books that we are thinking of listing on there. And we are going to be doing, like, we're each going to pick, I think, our own, or each of us are going to pick one RPG that we want to definitely review. I know
too hideously obscure.
Yeah, I mean, I know, James, you mentioned Ghostbusters, and I would love to review it if we can actually get copies of it.
Love Ghostbusters. It is so good. But, you know, if you weren't around in 1986 or have $300 burning a hole in your pocket, you're not going to see a copy of it. So talking about it is almost irrelevant, except just going, oh, it's so good. Yeah. I want something that, you know, people can actually refer to. Perhaps a little on the obscure side, you know, forgotten gems or something. Mm-hmm. But
something they can go and get if they really want it, not something that exists only in a rarefied sphere of elite collectors and, you know, hoarders.
Mm. I love this. The film, of course, Gareth Hanrahan, and I was assigned to do OGL Wild West long ago. It's in exactly one Western, Back to the Future Theory. If that's the only Western you've seen, you haven't actually seen a Western. That's not,
I would lay money that Gareth had also seen the Billy the Kid segment of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah, that's part of a movie, and it's still a time travel movie. I would not put it in the genre. Right. Yeah,
Westerns to see. Once Upon a Time in the West. High Noon. Shane, I guess.
There's a ton of
There are a lot of really great Westerns.
$2 more, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah, yes.
And that, at that point, you know it. It's they do all the tropes. They do the.
You know, really I would put in Unforgiven. Unforgiven is worth watching. Yeah. So
Unforgiven is you watch Unforgiven last. It is the reaction to
a Tombstone. It turns out it's a big genre. People were making a lot of
Silverado was fine.
Yeah. But anyways, nobody has scanned.
What's the Sam Raimi one? The Sam Raimi Western.
The Quick and the Dead, I think.
Quick and the Dead.
Yeah. Yes, oh, and he also did. Was Sam Raimi behind Briscoe County Jr., which I've never seen, but just, you know.
Yeah. I've seen a couple episodes of that. Yeah. I think he was. I mean, maybe just because of Bruce Campbell's in it. That it's kind of. But like watching something like Quick and the Dead is kind of interesting without like. That's a movie in a long conversation about Westerns because that's a reaction to a reaction to reaction to like, you know, movies from there's this, it's interesting to watch a movie like Unforgiven, like, which is one of the first Westerns I saw. And that's like a reaction to the decades of film history that I had no idea about when I first saw Unforgiven. I was like, oh, that's a cool movie. And that like, oh, it's a reaction to all the, you know, John Wayne and, yeah, anyways, it's a whole thing, but yeah, so we'll do genres that as a stretch goal, I think. Maybe we'll still work it out, but like talking about how RPGs have treated the genre. You know, I know I mean, for me, it wouldn't even be like horror would be the genre I would pick. It would be a subgenre of horror.
Yeah. Horror sank straight into the heart of gaming. You know, it's like horror and fantasy are the linchpins.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else, you know, science fiction is kind of the tag along, right?
Yeah.
You say that, but for a long time, there were basically two horror systems. There was Call of Cthulhu and there was Chill.
Yeah.
And Chill, I love first edition Chill, kind of Victorian horror. And then second edition modernized it and wasn't nearly as good. The Mayfair hardback edition, beautiful production values. Did not enjoy it, I think because it had lost what I loved in the first one. And then there was a flood of horror stuff.
But yeah, well, time, and it's like, it started out, there was a lot of science fiction stuff, and then it's all sort of kind of narrowed, and horror started out with just a few, and it kind of grew and branched and spread. Mm-hmm. And because people figured out that was an experience that translated to gaming really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Just to pick up something from the chat. Dead Heiress saying Evil Dead TV show tragically underappreciated. True. Yes. Not much of it, but what there was thoroughly enjoyable.
I'm trying to find the comments. Already had quite a bit of chat actually. I liked Evil Dead. Actually, just saw the new Evil or the Evil Dead movie from last year, Evil Dead Rises. Oh. I think it's quite excellent. It's a different take on Evil Dead as a sort of a very specific subgenre of horror, style of horror. I'm just gonna say they in the first act, the first 15 minutes, you see a wood chipper, and this is Chekhov's wood chipper. You're wondering when is that wood chipper gonna come back in, and boy, it does.
but it was, I mean, Raimi was kind of, I mean, there was comedy horror, there was Sam Raimi, and there was Return of the Evil Dead, I think. What is it? It's the spoof zombie movie set in New York, and because it's the mid-80s, there's breasts in it, and it's
very
funny in part, and not
Return of the Living Dead, I think.
Yeah,
Return of the Living Dead was not set in New York. It was set in like a smallish town, like a
And if I remember correctly,
that's the one with the talking zombies. Yeah.
Yeah, yes. And if I remember correctly, and the end is just you see the whole movie, and then it cuts to these guys in a bunker drinking coffee, and they're like, "Yeah, we got the go." And you see these nuclear weapons launch, and that's these two missiles fire off, and then that's the end of the film.
Yep. Yeah. Send more cops. I love. There's send actually send more paramedics. So there is I think they use both lines, but there's actually a band, thrash metal band called Send More Paramedics, that is inspired, and they're pretty good. I like this band, and yeah, it is. Anyways, I it's like I wrote a book about zombies. I'm a pretty big fan.
Wow. I'm going to digress wildly because that metal band has just gone in as my second most respected metal band of the week. The first one being the band whose drummer owned 9 shares in Tesla and launched the lawsuit that just cost Elon Musk $46 billion.
Hey, nice.
9 shares he had. and he's a drummer in a metal band. So I can't even remember the name of the metal band, but utter respect to them.
Yeah, no, that's
my favorite piece of. I'm going to be running that anecdote, that story out for months. It's so funny.
You could do a systemless X game plus system called Bruce. Yeah.
Yeah.
X plus Antifrass. Yeah. I love that. So I think
it's just because you see yourself as the announcer voice, Ross.
Hey, it's like I've been doing this for a while. I built a brand and it is what
okay.
it is.
Okay. Give us Evil Dead plus announcer voice, Ross. Go.
Evil Dead, hey, do you want to go to hell? You will be. Once you read that Necronomicon and all your friends and family will be possessed by the spirits of the dead. They'll become what we call deadites. And
all right, now Western plus announcer voice, go.
Hey, it's Russ Payton. Do you want to get shot in the town and as you die, a bunch of drunk people from a saloon watch you die? That's the promise of the Western plus announcer voice. You'll die in the dust. Kind of like a samurai film. If you're
the only announcer voice
in the streets and a bunch of drunk people watch from a bar, it's a Western movie or a samurai movie. So
the announcer voice I've got is more of the easy listening station at 4 a.m. We're here listening to a little Air Supply to get you through maybe you're just getting ready to head home after a long night's work, or maybe you're just getting up to start an early morning job. Whichever one it is, we're here for you.
You missed your calling as being part of the Hearts of Space announcer crew. Music from the Hearts of Space. Did an episode on that on my other podcast, Night Clerk Radio, recently. It's still going on. They're still doing it, and they've been working since the 80s.
Was it Heart of Space or Depths of Space?
Hearts. Music from the Hearts of Space.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. My
announcer voice is very... and now on Radio 4, it's time for the shipping forecast.
God, you know, we get the beeb on our public TV radio, our public radio late at night. And my mom would listen to that. And that would be like something like she loved listening to British radio late at night. Yeah. So,
it is the continuity. Nothing phases them. It's just it's the voice of sanity. It's if they announced nuclear war, it would somehow feel all right.
Oh, yeah.
Because it would be that voice.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be an unusually warm winter, folks.
I have one of the things I want to do as a passion project is someday, you play a lot of video games that have like sort of an open world thing and they have a radio station in like GTA, but also like the Fallout games. And I want to make like a 6-hour mix of like music and radio station bits. And I just as one thing so people could play it while they're playing one of those games or just whatever, and just get a bunch of Creative Commons music or public domain music and just be like, yeah, I'm the radio station guy in the bunker, just calmly announcing, oh, here's some weird music I found in the archives,
That's really cool. Yeah. Something I saw at UK Games Expo this summer and stupidly did not pick up, or I think when I went back to the booth they'd sold out, is a solo RPG where you are basically running a radio station after the apocalypse.
Oh wow.
I'll track down the name of it. I might do it as my choice for season three because just the concept is so cool. But the execution's really there as well.
Quinn Murphy's got a radio game coming inspired by Welcome to Night Vale.
Hmm. That is coming up. It's interesting you mentioned that because their Kids in the Hall came back like a year ago. And one of the best sketch they had was like a radio station DJ in a bunker playing one song. He only has one song.
I remember that one.
And he's just alone, and it's just this it's really great. I just love this aesthetic. Void's 1680 AM. That sounds about right. For the solo.
Dead Air was the one I was talking about.
Okay, Dead Air. Okay, let's take a look at that. Let's see here. Dead Air solo RPG. I think I found it. I have multiple.
It's quite a British take on running a radio station after the apocalypse.
Oh, wow. Threads meets the thick of it. Oh, wow. That sounds cheerful.
Oh, no.
I love it. Really cool. Yeah, I like the design, too.
Mm. It looked really sweet. It was one of those. I was walking past. I was in a walking meeting. You glance at a booth, and I'm going to come back and get that. And then, then you fail, too, because that
is... Solo RPGs are exploding, man, ever since.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just keep seeing more and more of them.
I just put Community Radio in the chat. That's Quinn's game. And I cannot get into the comments. I try to sign up and Google's just...
Oh, you're not linked. Yeah, here, I'll put the comment in here. Oops. Copy link. There's the...
Google doesn't come out and call me a slut, but I'm getting this.
Oh, yeah, you have to be logged into both Twitch and YouTube to do it because...
There's the problem.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm just not young enough.
So let's take a look at that on here, what Greg was talking about. Since we got a browser,
it's just a sign up thing.
Okay, it's a sign up thing. All right. It's
a second edition. I didn't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Frequencies is a interesting game I do want to play at some point. I have it on my Steam's wish list. And it's about being a radio station DJ, but it's like a puzzle game. People are calling you in and you have to like flip through documents to figure out how to save them from a killer, like how to repair their car, get their car started and things like that. So it's kind of like that bomb disarming game, but it's like single player. So the keyless entry and like... you have the map and you're trying to guide a person through their audio, their narrated description of where they're going.
Talk fast and nobody explodes.
That's the one. Yeah. So it's like a single player version of that, at least in terms of gameplay, but thematically it looks really interesting. So let's see here. The police station is going to call somebody as you try and help them.
Lord.
Yeah, I love...
I'm not trained for this. I just listened to a lot of Oasis.
Oh God! There's actually a short horror movie. Short, I mean, it's like 40 minutes. It's called AM 1200, and it's about like driving late at night, and you're in the middle of nowhere, and you hear this weird ass radio station, I don't know where you can... I found it somewhere. I think it was posted on YouTube and then like deleted later on, but like I don't remember where I saw it, but it's a really interesting short movie. Anyways, we just went on a weird tangent, but that's
As long as we're doing radio stuff, Archive 81's Left of the Dial is good. It's better if you have more of the backstory of, who these two guys who are basically leaving our realm into a nightmarish dream reality in order to try and recover a body for one of the characters. Yep, there it is. So it's good. I really liked it. I'm not sure if it's my favorite Archive 81, but it's a very good Archive 81. But and I would also be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to Pontypool.
Oh yeah, Pontypool. I love Pontypool. Probably split up. I think it's on Shudder now.
I think it is. I think I saw it there, and I'm like, I should rewatch that.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, it's on. I think it's on Shudder. Yeah, it's a very good horror film. Again, it's at a radio station, so yeah. I did get a. So I've been exporting YouTube the RPPR back catalog to YouTube, and which is taking a while because there's hundreds of episodes. But like, I'm starting to get comments about people listening to episodes that you know were posted years ago, and like one guy was really mad. It's like, I heard this was one of the top RPG podcasts out there, but you haven't switched to virtual tabletops. Like, what are you spending your money on? Radio is dead, and I'm just which. Not how a podcast work, but I just replied, I'm sorry, man, radio towers are very expensive to run. So I don't know what he thinks.
Once you've made that sunk cost, yeah, you can.
Patrick Fez, listening while driving. Hope you're all doing well. Yeah, quite well. Patrick Fez, by the way, is going to be kickstarting a British rural horror scenario anthology this month. It looks really cool. So
yes, I have it in my inbox right now. I need to read it this evening when we finished.
Oh, okay, cool. What comments did they, what episodes did they comment on? One was like episode where I was talking about role-playing while podcasting, like I'm recording myself podcast or playing games, which obviously changes how you play the games a bit. And so we were talking about that. And then the other one was just some random Delta Green one shot I ran. And he was angry about it over two separate episodes and commented.
I'm so angry about this that I need to listen to the second one in order to sustain my wrath.
I can't believe you haven't switched to virtual tabletops. This guy has zero respect for game designers. Yeah. Which, amazing.
I mean... how much respect do we deserve? We're not exactly curing cancer over here, buddy.
No. but yeah, so but coming back, you know, thinking about like what kind of genre I would want to cover, it would be a subgenre of horror. And right. I wanna, you know, obviously my pet thing would be something like, you know, liminal or creepypasta or architectural
surreal game. Where you're not sure if you're awake or dreaming. Yeah
Carcosa and like well there's also games like Public Access, which I'm really interested in. What are they called? Analog horror, that would be the one. Have you heard of this? Public Access is from the Gauntlet.
You were nagging me about it.
I was mentioning it. I've yet to run it. I do want to run it this year.
Poor Ross is like, nagging's a strong word, Greg. I told you once.
I just mentioned it. Yeah. but like, it's analog horror is sort of the popular thing right now, which is, you know, horror with a VHS aesthetic, but also, you know, 1980s technology, not digital, and very... much on ambiguity and uncertainty about what's happening rather than like body horror, which is about your body mutating or somebody else's
speaking
body
mutating. Of Archive 81 again.
Yeah.
That's the aesthetic that, and the Magnus Archives, the two great horror podcast archives.
Yeah. So that's what I would do. Mine, James, what would you do? What genre would you want to do an episode on the most?
I mean, I would love to say humor in games, humorous role-playing games.
Yeah.
It's an unloved genre, you know, and the standouts do tend to be from the 80s. We're looking at Toon, you're looking at Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, maybe Tales from the Floating Vagabond, but then it kind of dies away.
I mean, Paranoia is still there, but like...
Paranoia, of course, yeah. I am ashamed I forgot Paranoia. But yeah, it's kind of neglected now, and people say, you know, well, of course my game is funny, but is that the purpose of it? And is it just that your game makes people laugh, or is it designed to make people laugh? because I would argue very strongly that although the mechanics were fairly nascent in the 80s, they do have a way of culturing the narrative in such a way that it creates laughter, whether it's the laughter at someone else's discomfort, like Toon, because Toon is the game of Warner Brothers cartoons, and it's massive slapstick.
Yeah. Inspectors is another example.
Inspectors, yeah.
That's more recent, but that's still like, I think, the late 90s or early 2000s.
Late 90s, around that.
Yeah, the Kickstarter, I don't know anything about the Monty Python game. That's Exalted Funeral, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's gonna be a license to print money, whether it's, you know, however it turns out. But I'm like, that's a big swing, man. If you bought that, people will never forgive you.
Yeah, because it's going to be repeating the tropes, isn't it? It's not going to be creating new jokes in the style of Monty Python, because there's, what, five guys who can do that, and one of them's dead.
Yeah, and they don't talk to each other anymore.
Yeah, pretty much. Great interview with Gilliam just up on the Guardian website. It's the one where the readers write questions for him to answer, and some of the questions are great.
You can work comedy into anything, though. I recently played some EP Eclipse Phase games as a renegade virtual theme park AI based on Winnie the Pooh. Yeah, like that's the thing with comedy, like you were talking about, James, is that you can make any game funny. So like doing it as a genre, the game on that is very hard.
Every time this comes up, I mention In Space, you know, my free game, where I don't know if I succeeded in brute forcing an answer to this, but it's just the core of In Space is a token economy. You pay tokens or gamble tokens in order to make things happen. But anytime someone makes you laugh, you have to give them a token, which
that is a brilliant rule.
Well, the plan was, let's give narrative authority primarily to the people who are making people laugh. So I've had uproarious times with it. So comedy can age badly. Oh, that's not wrong. Things that were funny in the 80s are now gross.
Or hell, early to mid 2000s. Like you watch a teen comedy movie from that era and you're just like, ooh, that's let alone
why did we all think Ace Ventura Pet Detective was okay?
I mean, some things hold up, but like Shrek is forever. All right, so we are doing
you would do the what did you call the genre, the
analog horror.
The new Magnus Archives, the Magnus Protocol, seems to be moving from analog horror to not cyber horror, but like everything is through a crappy computer system instead of a series of cassette tapes. Fiasco. James would do
an episode of it.
Yeah.
James would do comedy games. I think I'd go superhero. Because they're popular and I've done them, but somewhere deep in my subconscious is a better way to do it. I feel like it's in there, and I am just waiting for the peristalsis to push it up to where my conscious mind can pull it out and wash off all the childhood misery and, you know, repressed whatevers and present it. I feel like there's a better way that no one's ever done it, but I can't see it yet. And I want to talk about, and I'm like, if I could talk about it for 90 minutes with James and Ross, that might that might really kind of push that upward.
Something.
Yeah, this is just something I saw recently on Reddit talking about the very big superhero RPG recently, the Marvel Multiverse RPG, talking about
it's
how
Forbex,
the,
baby.
Yeah, it's Forbex, and apparently 64 completely combat untrained civilians stand a serious chance of breaking through Doromu's shield of the Seraphim and killing him. Like the idea is that there's you know what we talk about, Ludo narrative dissonance. The game mechanics of this game as they are currently are do not like stand up.
I've heard. Oh, yeah. One of the comments, I've heard of capes. I haven't read capes.
Okay. Yeah, I've not. I think I've heard the name before, but I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. Wasn't it the original DC Superheroes game, the Mayfair one, that used an exponential scale? So you went up a point in your attribute or your skill, and that doubled how good you were. So you could, you know, it was a scale that could accommodate, you know, your grunt on the ground who can turn things blue if he touches them, and Superman.
Was that
or Marvel? Like, because there's,
I'm pretty sure that was
that the was DC the DC one. I think.
Okay, yeah, because yeah. I don't know about that. I know about the Marvel. Marvel.
Well, yeah,
because I know about say, this. But yeah, that's the from the old 1980s Marvel superhero RPG.
And Wild Talents does this too, where we're like, okay, you know, we're going to try and emulate a physics engine, and I'm not sure that's the right way to do it. Because comics specifically, I mean, stories about superpowered people, Wild Talents does well, but specifically comics, they're not consistent. They're not, the physics in there are not consistent with reality, and the physics in there are not consistent with themselves. It's, you know, you will see Spider-Man being able to pick up a bus in one issue, and then 10 issues later, he doesn't seem that strong. And, you know, well, his spider sense, you know, allows him to dodge anything except a few things that, you know, just get him. So I'm like, I'm like, maybe it's a thematic approach.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a, you know, okay, we're going to just give people narrative. You know, if you have the narrative juice, you can say your power works this way, this one time, and, you know, not necessarily ever come back to it.
Yeah.
A couple of things from the comments. Scribblykins, are there any superhero RPG games that move into it from a more narrative game angle? I'm not aware of any, but then I'm not a big superhero games fan. I'm sure somebody must have tried it.
I mean, Fate, like any kind of Fate thing where you have Fate points and aspects and like, but in terms of like going farther into that, yeah, there's Masks, which is powered by the Apocalypse, and that's young superheroes. And that's supposed to be pretty good. I haven't played it myself, but I've heard from friends who have run it. I'm trying to think of other. Yeah. Those are the most recent. I haven't heard about any, like, because like a lot of superhero RPGs are now like really influenced by Mutants and Masterminds, right? That's still around and that's still quite popular.
That seems to have become the bedrock of an awful lot of the space that Champions used to occupy seems to be M&M these days. And good for Green Ronin.
I don't know. Is it something? Yeah, something we could look into. We could definitely. Yeah, hey, we get to that stretch goal. We can find the answer to that. There we go.
I've heard great things about Face Rip, but I've never.
Yeah, again, Face Rip is that's the name of it. There's a OGL version of it now, but like that's, if you look here, you can see the anti-vision, you know, those are attributes, and like RM means remarkable. So you would look back at that previous thing, and like cross-reference, there's RM right there. I have no idea. I remember flipping through these books like a friend had them growing up. I was like, oh my God, this looks cool. But I can make absolutely no sense out of any of this. But they statted up everybody in this thing. So, Hey, Wild Talents. Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah. It's
a very good.
And I appreciate you for it.
Spirikins comes back and says there's games like Quiet Year for cooperatively telling a story, but nothing like that for superhero genres. And I have suddenly had an idea for the way that you could do the Legion of Superheroes role-playing game. Though I wouldn't, because every Legion of Superheroes fan would hate me, because that's the way Legion fandom works. Plus, I'm not invested. I got out of the Legion in the 90s and have stayed out.
What is this toxic concept, James?
The Legion of Superheroes. It's the DC universe stuff, but I think it's like 500 years in the future.
Yeah.
And they
No, I mean, what's your idea for doing it?
It's just it's essentially the Quiet Year, but with a troop of this troop of superheroes from all over, whose job is basically
you just take turns describing story arcs or like
exactly just, and threats to the universe, mm-hmm. and your interpersonal relationships as well. Because the thing about the Legion is it was explicitly, well, I don't think it ever explicitly said it, but it was absolutely a soap opera, mm-hmm. and it was all about who's with who and who's not with who, and you know, all of that.
I think it could work if I had it
as the Quiet Year is a fascinating idea.
Yeah,
I think that could really work. I'm gonna throw that one out. I'm not gonna do this. Someone else go and do that. Someone who cares about the Legion these days.
Don't make it the Legion, just make it some. Well, you wouldn't want it to be about the Legion because I guess your fandom is not the fandom's not where you want it, James. I think part of the fun,
they'd buy it and they'd hate it.
Yeah, they'd buy it in order to hate it. I've just bought this thing to make myself so angry. This is going to keep me going for 3 months at least. But I've always felt that, you know, a large part of the fun of superhero material is picking out the powers and having, mm-hmm. you know, this one specific weird power. And it's like, how's that fit in? It's one of my issues with the Marvel movies is that it's like, okay, so this is just a lot of strong guys who can fly. There's none of the like sort of weird edge piece mm-hmm. abilities. Even the street level stuff, it's like, oh, well, mostly we're just using superpowers to gloss over the same stuff that in an action movie, it's like, yeah, that explosion should have killed him. That should have peeled his skin off like an orange.
Let's see. Is there a powered by the apocalypse skin for supers? Literally Mask, the one I have up on the screen.
Okay.
Is powered by the apocalypse. It's about young. It's about like Young Justice or Teen Titans style characters.
So there's a game called Masks. There's a game called Capes. We just need one called Tights. And
yeah. You know,
there's your title, James.
I have been thinking about a second edition for my superhero RPG Base Raiders, and I was thinking about like when you use a superpower in a role playing game, it almost always you use it in the sense that you would also use a skill, right? Like mm-hmm. instead of using firearms to shoot a guy, you use your laser vision or whatever, right? Or your super hearing or your flight to dodge or move. So like I would simply like my idea that I need to play test obviously is to tie every superpower is basically upgrading a skill. And then you add extras to it that allow you to do something that is non-typical, but it's always basically it replaces a standard skill. So every superpower is the game mechanically wise treated as a skill. That would be something I want to try out. So that's, and so it's a very early idea. I haven't done much. I've only done like one single session as a playtest and it worked okay then, but I haven't done like a campaign or anything yet. So, but that's where I'm sitting. Yeah.
I would not be against, I saw it in the comments. What are the chances of you guys tackling Exalted? I wouldn't be against it, but man, Exalted seems like one of those things where it's like the Mandelbrot set. You can always zoom in and find more. The background there seems pretty immense. So we would have to pick which Exalted we were going to do.
I mean, yeah, there's multiple editions of it.
Everyone's got their favorite splat, and their favorite splat has, its specific thing. And
yeah. It uses the D10 pool system like World of Darkness, but it's lots of dice is what I've heard. It's as many dice mm-hmm. as Warhammer 40,000, which is a lot of fucking dice. and you know, like I throw the moon at you. I parry the moon like that kind of Dragon Ball Z level of.
I saw someone describe it once as this is the game of being a character so cool that God came up to you and said, you know what? You're so cool. I'm going to make you cooler.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a game. I've honestly, it wasn't even the setting that put me off, but like the density of the rules. I flipped through the rule book and I'm just like, oh god, that's so much to learn. And like, even if I learn it, teaching it to the other players is going to be such an ask. Yeah. I would like high level fantasy, like high power characters, to explore that in a game, but like, geez. Yeah. If you just make it easier to get to the table with it, you know, in some ways it was like Lancer. Like I just couldn't, like after running two sessions of Lancer, like I can't do a campaign of this, because it's so complex. But yeah, let's see. Any other things?
Someone just put in, I made a single character in Exalted and that was a task. And yeah, but I remember getting the book and reading through it, and I'm like, oh, I want to do that. Oh, I want to do that. I know exactly what character I do who was Sidereal cast. Oh, I knew exactly what character I do who was Horizon cast. So it passed the test of firing me up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I never did play it, but...
Yeah, but to go to fantasy in a different route... you know, one game I would be interested in talking about that I just got would be Mouse Ritter, which
more German.
Yeah, more. Well, it's not made
Mouse Ritter. Das ist ein Mouse Ritter.
But yeah, it comes in a nice box. It's
pretty.
Let me just zoom in here. There we go. Mouse Ritter comes at the Exalted Funeral I mentioned before, just came up with a thing to print it back, and it has a nice little rule book that actually opens up and reveals a little tableau. Very thin rule book though, and interesting tables. And one thing I like is it has the rules are similar or inspired by Morkborg, but they have some mechanical variations. I'll put this up on PDF, but you can see here you have slots for inventory. And so you have your offhand and
main paw.
Yeah, main paw. And so you get actually there are these little. The reason I wanted to get this in print is that the items. You actually have little punch out things that you're supposed to put on your card.
It's like a computer role-playing game from 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Wait, so how do you stick those on? Just like blue tack?
You just put them on there and hope for the best, you know, like, you also have little inventory things, like candy and things.
What was that thing? Was that bleach?
I'd have to look. Let's see here. Spirit shell, blind.
Paper skin. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, a candy cane. So this is a cute game.
It's set in a world where technology exists, like humans have tractors and electricity and things like that. But like you're little mouse people and you have little magic spells and stuff like that. And like it has an adventure setting or an adventure called Honey in the Rafters, which is just like a little two page little. It's like a GM screen.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, they know who's trying for stuff.
You've got to get up into the rafters. Is there a giant pumpkin that comes after you while apologizing?
Let's take a look. Yeah, there are. There is a.
No, don't be ridiculous, James. There's a giant skunk who comes after you.
There's bees. It's cursed honey, too. There's like a curse thing for it. So
straight out of the Bible.
Yeah. So it's
bears come and kill you all.
Yeah.
Okay, so, James Ross, I saw this again. I'm reading the comments. I can't do anything with the comments. Is there an ER drama game? Because that would be...
Oh, yes.
I mean, Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
okay. is there a non-magical one? Because my feeling about this is that you're going to run into the problem that you run into with science fiction games of wanting to get it right, where you know, people are going to be like, whoa, my care, I don't know nothing about pulling out no glioblastoma, so I can't have my character perform blastectomy.
There's no procedural.
People want to get it right, and so I don't know, and mechanicalizing all of medical science seems like, primetime adventures would be the way to do it.
The only thing
would be a way to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, what comes to mind is you need some kind of engine.
Yeah.
That generates puzzles, and the act of operating or act of treating the patient is some kind of puzzle. And if you solve the puzzle really well, booyah. If you solve the puzzle okay, then, well, you know, they're okay. They've got some, you didn't save the leg, or, you know, they've got some side effects and complications. But if you fail the puzzle, if you can't figure the puzzle out, then it's like, oh, you lost the patient, and their daughter, you know, their 8-year-old daughter is just staring at you, weeping, and she lunges at you and is pounding you on the chest saying, "You killed my daddy." So, you just need a way to automate making puzzles. That's all.
Well, there's also the problem with this is like a problem with co-op board games, which is the sort of like the team captain problem, which is if you have a cooperative board game, which often is a team puzzle, right? Like eventually the player who is best at solving puzzles just starts telling everybody what to do, right? I'm sure we've all played Pandemic, where it's like, you should do this, you should do this, you should do that. And so it's
I got no problem with it.
Well, people, it's a cooperative game. And like, that's not like people show up to make their own choices, not to be told what to do the entire time. So I think like that's sort of like that would be hard to do.
There's a bunch of modern co-ops that have found various different ways around that. And Daybreak, Matt Leacock's latest, which I have and have yet to get to the table, is, because it contains some slightly antagonistic elements, because you're all playing different countries. And so it's not like, yes, let us all join hands together and sing that song from a
code. The League of Nations. It's going to be great.
A, you know,
you're still World War II
for elements of being top nation. That's pretty sweet. And then there are the ones that do it in silence. But I think, we were talking about solo games. I think you could do this as a really interesting solo game or as a solo game book. With, you know, there are clever solo game book mechanics. It's not just choose which paragraph you follow. There are different, you can build puzzles in all of that. I think you could do a medical procedural as a solo game book, and I think it could be really interesting.
Yeah, 100%.
Having watched some medical dramas, I'm like, I think a large part of it, which Face Anatomy captured, is that, I'm married to X, but I'm dating Y on the sly, and you have to have all this overblown emotional drama going on, which, you know, I would want to design it so that if you are the tactical player who's like, I want to solve these puzzles and save lives on the operating table, that's there for you. And if you're, you know, a big funny voice fan like me, and it's like, I just want to, you know, be in character and emote and, you know, try and explain to that 7-year-old girl that, no, I didn't kill her poppy. The glioblastoma killed her poppy.
Gareth's suggestion of doing it with Operation instead of Jenga like Dread is brilliant.
Yeah, and just solved it.
Footnote here, I'm currently writing is Cyberplunk, which is a cyberpunk role-playing game, except instead of dice, you use a Kerplunk tower. Where you pull out the skewers and the marbles drop down. That's your, which it's a dread, it's a silly thing. It may be part of the Kickstarter. We're here to talk about a Kickstarter, in case you
don't.
But the other thing, Gives a Guy, which I've just mispronounced badly, is suggesting doing a Civil War medical drama, which is great. But how about you do an ancient Greek medical drama where you've got Hippocrates on one side, Galen on another side, arguing about the nature of what makes the human body work? It's no, we must rebalance. Balance her humors. No. But I think that could be fun, because it's
just, no. What you need to do is frighten her uterus back into her.
Boom.
Yeah. That stuff where you're literally making it up, because mostly that's what they were doing back then. I think that could be huge fun. Yes, trepanning. Drill another hole in his skull.
Well, Call of Cthulhu already beat you to the punch in trepanation, because I know Delta Green has it. There's also a scenario set in the Spanish Inquisition where there's a little insects from Shagai flying around. You're like, well, better, you got a bug in your brain, better cut it out. Better open a hole in your skull about it. Trepanning worked. It can work.
it works for some things.
It killed surprisingly few people.
Yeah. All good ideas. But yeah, we our Kickstarter is we'll be launching it ideally March 4th. We need to get it finished writing all the stuff for it and all that, but we'll do that this month and get the episode zero ready to go up. We have recorded episode zero, by the way, where we talked about Hole in the Sky. Yeah, we could actually talk a little bit more about that now.
Which we played and had fun with.
Actually, I'll just pull up the PDF and just put it on the screen, and we can do a whole thing about it. Let's see here. Hole in the Sky. There we go. This is the scenario we did for our season 2 finale, Hole in the Sky, and it is a 20-page PDF, and now you can see we talk about this in the episode, obviously, but here's the map, the side view map of the I really like how they do have multiple views of this is good when a dungeon shows the dimensionality, you know, like here's the side view, here's the top down view, so you can like get a sense of like how it is laid out, because it's a very complex in terms of it's like, it's not like a bunch of like tunnels and, you know, in a cave, right? Like it winds around and it has verticality in it. It's really neat. And here's our little peasants going here.
Our poor peasants. No matter what the social system is, they all agree on one, you know, communism, monarchy, capitalism. They don't get together on much, but the one thing they agree on, screw them peasants.
Yeah, we didn't talk much about the random encounters. We were the Woven Women. I think we kind of missed those.
Missed those entirely. There were Woven Women.
Yeah, it's only a random encounter in on the way to the fortress. After you get in the Hole in the Sky, they're magical guardian plant creatures, occasionally butt off to guard minor shrines and temples. If they hold still, they seem to be part of the background vegetation. Only when they attack, they reveal vaguely feminine form, like a thorn bush twisted into humanoid shape with bizarrely natural blue human eyes. They take double damage from fire. On a successful hit, the victim must make a DC 14 fort save or develop a terrible rash. It's a constant distraction, giving -2 on rolls until it passes.
Listening to that old song Poison Ivy.
I didn't throw this in when I ran it because I wanted to do a little,
because you don't like the song Poison Ivy.
No, you got me. It's definitely that. Not that I in hindsight I should have killed more of you,
yeah, you should. We got off lightly. It's surprising.
If I had a time for every time I heard that.
Are there any, James, are there any particular parts about the scenario we didn't mention in the episode you want to look at now? Oops, this is a...
I don't think so. I think we gave it, other than the kind of the random encounters, and the problem I have with kind of OSR random encounters like that is, yes, some of them are really interesting, but basically they're there to be killed. They're there for combat encounters. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have an interesting conversation with them. Those ones specifically are there to interrupt you on the path from the invisible bridge or the hole in the sky to the fortress. They're a distraction. They're not. There's a couple there you could get. And we did meet one who, you know, somebody who'd been there before us and was basically teetering on the brink of madness. And I think we satisfactorily pushed him over that and watched him fall. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. If you like this sort of thing, you'll like this sort of thing. I'm not really selling our episode zero, am I? I'm not an OSR fan. I mean, I think this is the thing I can sell. You get a bunch of me venting about the OSR, which is just, it's really not my flavor of role play. I can understand why people really like it. I go into an extended car metaphor.
How many people who are really into the OSR are our age, are venerable white-haired gamers who were there for the first time this set of vibes came around? Because I think certainly some are, who are like, oh, you know, back when I was 16, games were simple like this, and it wasn't all these, you know, cat girls smoking cigarettes, blah blah blah, to steal a steal a line from someone's RPGNet post. But yeah. I think a lot of it is younger people who were, you know, a sperm in 1987 and who are now like, oh man, gaming was so much better back then, with the confidence of, you know, people having nostalgia for a past they never experienced. It's like, yeah, if you take all of what gaming was like back then and you cut out this thin slice of the coolest bits, then yeah, it looks pretty great.
Yeah.
But
yeah, no, it's I mean, the thing is, like we talk about in the episode, is that the Dungeon Crawl Classics is better than the original game, mechanically speaking. I feel like it's a more interesting system and a lot better balanced, and has a lot more interesting, like more interesting things can happen in it than in standard D&D, because like you roll for every spell cast, so every spell is like, well, magical. It can work this time, but maybe not next time. Maybe it overworks, you know, works too well. It would be interesting to see the demographics of the, like the DCC. Cause I know like the NSR, like the new school Renaissance, which is related to the OSR, like games like Mouse Trader, games like Fist, and Fist already has its own like derivatives, like Planet Fist, which are much younger, like a much younger audience. Like I played a session. Let me see if I can find Planet Fist. So Fist is super rules light, based on Powered by the Apocalypse, but then there is Planet Fist, which is inspired by like Halo and video games like Planet Side, if you remember that. And it's a game where it's in the far future. It's a sci-fi role playing game where when you die, you respawn, like they clone you back. So it's like it's inspired by Starship Troopers, Battlefield Bad Company, and Planet Side 2. Death is life, shootouts are stories, fiction first. And this is this the designer for it, Jess, is younger. I don't know exactly how old she is, but she's definitely not like, she was not there in the original D&D days. There's a lot of people, younger people, interested in OSR game principles, but making games to suit them and not being like, we must follow the holy text of original Dungeons and Dragons and into eternity, you know.
Okay, someone just asked the difference between NSR and OSR, which sounds like a Ross question.
Yeah.
Like different letters at the start.
Yeah, you got it. It's old school versus new school. Like, again, OSR, I think, is based on taking the experience of 1970s and early 80s Dungeons and Dragons and into the now. So streamlining or improving or getting that old Gygaxian naturalism,
First et cetera. Thing you're going to need is a plaid shirt with really long pointy collars, and you're going to have to start growing your sideburns in now.
Yeah. So, and then NSR is like, take the idea of what made that fun, like rulings, not rules, like very streamlined, fast character creation, but make it not D&D, make it something more interesting than that. You know, so like, again, Planet Fist is NSR, I would argue, because your character is very quick to make, very quick to resolve things, and but still, it's, and also like minimalist, like game writing in terms of scenarios, like stat blocks are very small, not a trad RPG that's the size of a phone book, right? Like, so Mouse Raider is also NSR, I would argue. Yeah, it's a very vague thing, and the people in both of these sort of scenes argue about the definitions themselves quite a bit, and a lot of them are like, oh, both are bullshit. They're just marketing terms. It's not real. So, yeah, if that helps.
So like pop music, well, not pop music, like alternative music.
Any underground.
Real punk.
Yeah, this isn't real metal. This isn't real hip hop. This isn't real EDM. This isn't real vaporwave. It's just, yeah, this isn't real prog rock. Yeah.
It's just poses.
Not authentic.
Yeah. It's not authentic. So yeah. Yeah, but they're very cool stuff. And I quite like it, especially because anytime I have to spend like a night making a character, it's like, oh God, no, I don't want to spend 2 hours making my little guy to throw into the adventure. I want to get to the adventure.
Let me pick two things, derive two things, and go.
Yeah. But yeah, let's see here. I think we kind of covered everything. Any other questions does anybody have? Did we miss anything?
Ostensibly about the Kickstarter, if anyone's got any quick questions, but you know, what did I have for dinner? That's perfectly valid.
What did you have for dinner?
Soup.
Nice. What kind of soup?
Chunky chicken and rice, and it was very good.
Okay.
It's cold here. It's got cold again. So it's just exactly what I needed before coming out to sit in a shed for an hour.
64 degrees Fahrenheit here. And
that looks like a pretty swag shed, though, James.
It's a home office, basically. But yeah, you will notice there are bicycles behind me. It is used for storage as well.
To me, it's not a shed unless it's filthy and has serial killer vibes. I'm a simple man. I want my sheds dirty, unpainted, filled with rusty pieces of metal.
The theory was I'd have a desk at one end and my wife would have a desk at the other end. And then apparently I type too loudly. And it's distracting.
You selfish bastard, James.
I know. I really don't. Actually, I do at the moment because my portable keyboard's developed a squeak on the spacebar. I haven't had a squeaky keyboard.
That's my personal hell right there.
Well, you're not one of those mechanical keyboard guys who's like, I'm not.
I mean, it's Cherry. It's the German, you know, one of the great keyboard brands, but it's not one of their mechanicals. It's
you don't customize. You don't have little custom little keys and everything. Yeah.
I like work to type on them. I like the, you know, the low form factor stuff. This is my, you know, that's how flat my actual keyboard is.
I've got it like
I use day to day.
Yeah.
This is
keyboard check.
I don't like these things very often. Artec. This is a
solar. I've got the ergonomic one from Microsoft.
Oh, nice. Solar powered.
I've got
keyboard,
the fake wood paneled one where I've every time a key breaks and I have to yank it and blast out the gunk, I reinstall it upside down.
What time of day? Definitely in the morning. You know, probably 8 or 9 or something like that. I think you can't schedule it. I think you have to manually post it. So I had to
I think you could schedule the time. Okay. On Kickstarter.
You didn't used to be able to, so I don't know if they've changed that. Can we get chapter markers? That's a cool idea. I'll add that. Look into chapter markers.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know for stretch goals, we want to do more episodes, obviously. The genre episodes, I think we'll definitely put on a stretch goal. Other things, transcripts, that would be something to look into.
We experimented with them in season
transcripts
two.
They're not difficult so much as time consuming.
Pay for labor,
AI is clearly garbage, but one thing it's okay for is turning speech into text, but then you have to go through and slug everyone who was speaking. Let's edit out all this stuff. Let's hunt for homonyms. That's a big one.
Yeah. RPGs have such weird terminology that it's not gonna Sorry.
And if you've never transcribed an interview as well, you don't realize how much space they take out. What we mostly talk about, 150, 180 words a minute. I think. That's fairly standard. Maybe not quite, like, say 150. So, you know, 10 minutes, that's 1,500 words. 100 minutes, which is about fairly average for us, that's 15,000 words. That's a pretty decent size RPG supplement.
Almost a novella.
We then have to edit.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a decent amount of time that has to, you know, it once you run it through the AI.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was a journalist back in the time when you had to transcribe your interviews by hand. Mm. And, yeah, it would be a day's work.
Yeah.
Wait. You think fountain pens are quiet? Let me see if I can do it.
Oh, no. the ASMR bones popping.
Normally my wrist sounds like popcorn.
Aw. Could you have episodes of games you actually play or favorite systems? That'd be a good one. Yeah, systems. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's going to be, you know, Delta Green, Red Markets, Eclipse Phase.
It's going to be Armies. Because that's, you know, it's not necessarily, I will never surpass it. No, it's because that's what people want to play with me. So
yeah.
It's the game I can get into. Well, pretty soon I'm hoping to do a Rain actual play. So.
Yeah, there are. That'd be cool. Yeah, I finally it's coming out, right? Yeah.
What, Rain or MS Teams?
Rain. Hey.
Yes. So.
Yeah, there are ways to do multi-person transcription. We do record everybody to a separate track. So, but then integrating that in there, and also, you know, Apple Podcasts is going to do a transcript of every podcast that they get just automatically. Ooh. Like, they just announced that as a free thing they're going to do, but it's all going to be automated, obviously. So we'll see how accurate it is. We'll definitely do. Yeah. So we'll look into doing stretch goals. We'll just have to figure out how much work it takes to
how much work it is and how much money that work is worth.
Yeah, basically. Planet Fist FPS inspired RPG, right? Slipgate Choke Point is another game that is inspired by. Yeah, you get this real. I do love how in game design, like video games. Computers. Now we have video games. Video games are inspired by board games and role-playing games because D&D comes out at the same time as computers are becoming popular. And then, like, after a certain time, role-playing, you know, tabletop games start getting inspired by video games and they start feeding back into each other.
This is the tabletop role-playing game of the movie inspired by the computer game.
Yeah. Rain, the role-playing game that Greg wrote.
Yes, back in like 2008.
Greg Stolze, yeah. yeah, see, it's second edition is happening. It's a very great game. Something definitely worth checking out. But you know, I did see I haven't finished watching, but there's a new People Make Games video on murder mysteries in China.
I heard about that.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, really worth a watch. The trouble is that you can literally not buy any of them in English.
Yeah, they're not. It seems like people are trying to translate them, but they haven't finished it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
bizarrely, the first one was published by Asmodee back when Asmodee itself was a games publisher rather than owning games publishers. Back about 10 or 15 years ago, and it came out in English and French and died. Nobody bought it except about 20 people in China who created a cultural revolution out of it. Not that cult, different cultural revolution.
Yeah, you want to really be careful slinging that.
I'm in England. What are they going to do? It's the Indians who send out the assassins these days.
Oh, geez, yeah. That is true, yeah. Hey, interesting times. Yay. It's interesting to see how all of these things are feeding into each other. And, like, obviously, these Chinese... There's a whole visual novels or video game genre that obviously feed into this the murder mystery kind of tropes. And so I wouldn't be surprised if visual novels start being influenced by these Chinese games because a lot of visual novels are made in China and in Japan. It's really interesting. very cool stuff. Anyway,
what's great about humankind is everybody steals from everybody. It's beautiful.
It's true. It's getting, we were talking about westerns at the beginning, and I mentioned samurai movies. Like, talk about like one influencing the others.
Magnificent
Seven, you know, like Kurosawa watched a bunch of cowboy movies and started making movies. And then,
What is it? Savage Planet, not Savage Planet, the bizarre thing that came out just before Christmas. I very nearly.
Oh, Rebel Moon?
Rebel Moon.
Jesus. Oh, yeah.
I almost took my family to see that. I'm going, well, it'll either be really good or really bad, but at least it'll be memorable.
Rebel Moon was Netflix.
It was. But again, it's Seven Samurai. It's Battle of the Planets.
Magnificent Seven. Yeah, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
It's all RPGs go back to Yojimbo. That's all I can say. To summarize, March 4th. In the morning, I'll try and get an exact time once we get everything, we get approved by Kickstarter, but we got to finish the text, we got to finish stretch goals, all that stuff. We'll do that this month. I'll let it up as episode zero that'll go live that day. We'll run it for a month and see where we get to. But I think this time, the biggest difference is what rewards we'll have. We're still working that out. And we'll probably not do any online games run by us because it's just a hassle to fulfill. And at this point, hopefully we have enough fan base that we don't need to. But we will definitely have curated episodes as an option. So
those have been fun.
Yeah.
It's really all fun. This was something I was talking about in the Session Zero recording, if I recall correctly, mm-hmm. is that the sort of thing we would pick to have ourselves do is, you know, that's our comfort zone. And the sort of thing that y'all pick for us to do is over here outside our comfort zone. I never would have read or heard of Outlaws of the Water Margin. Mercenary. Yeah.
Planet Mercenary. Surprisingly really interesting.
Hey.
Yeah. Let our narrative distance be on role play with you. Look, if you want to role play, I run games every month on the RPPR Patreon. I just sign up.
We should have, guys, is we'll be a player in your game.
Yeah.
We won't run it, but we'll show up and we'll be that guy.
Especially if you have your own RPG podcast. We love to play.
Any excuse to plug our stuff.
What are you looking to initially produce for episodes? I think our base goal would probably be like 9 episodes and then do stretch goals, 6 or 9 episodes like we did last time, then just do a ton of stretch goals for more episodes.
Right.
So financially, not a big ask.
Yeah,
probably the same basic ask as last as season 2.
I am toying with it. I haven't figured it out of doing multiple reward levels to give. Just vote with your dollars, right? Like have get more votes if you want to, make sure your favorite game gets picked, something like that. And have you considered commissioning illustrations for each episodes? That could be a stretch goal. Yeah, I mean, we all know some artists that could be fun. I'll have to talk about it.
One of the stretch goals we were talking about. I mentioned Cyberpunk. We're talking about maybe putting together a zine, essentially.
Oh yeah,
I thought that was a done deal. I wrote my two pages.
Okay, yeah, yeah. We need that. That would be the big stretch goal, is an actual written thing that we do. So yeah, we need to.
My work on that's done.
Okay, well. Someone's done all their homework. All right. Well, someone else has a lot of fucking editing to do. We'll work it out. We'll have more updates as we go. Were there any other questions that we missed? Maybe if you want to get you and your friends all pool some money together, and then you can all back to get us to do, Ghost Dog, this role playing game, because I'd love to do that that game.
that was a sweet little game.
Yeah,
one of the first that was specifically designed for a GM and one player.
Yeah,
which I think is a very undercated niche.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll do like a thing where we watch the movie and then talk about the game. I don't know. If we do that. So the sky's the limit. Be sure to go to our website.
Remember that movie, Ghost dog?
Yeah.
Ghost dog?
If you're not on our Discord, please join it. We'll have more updates there. Yes. And I'll put this up on the podcast feed so people know. But I think that we're already over our time by like 15 minutes almost. But yeah, before we go, James, do you have anything you want to mention for people, for other projects you're working on or anything else?
Nothing right now. Nothing I can talk about. I have one of those. There's a 5% chance that in a couple of months I am going to be just doing Muppet Hands and being madly excited. 5% chance. Can't talk about it right now. Sorry.
Okay. Well, the anticipation, I'm sure people will be like losing.
2023 was my year of big, potentially really exciting big projects falling through. So I'm not holding out any great hope for this one, but you never know. It might.
I just stuck up my my Kickstarter that's running right now for a fantasy novella that is surprisingly warm compared to a lot of my other work, but still, it's got some spiky bits to it.
Okay. So this is James right now. This is what James is doing right now.
What's he building?
Yeah, what's he building? What's he building in there? In the Tom Swade voice. Yeah. So let me pull that up here. Switch over. And I'll put the link in the comments so you can go check that out.
Funded. Comfortably funded.
Yeah. Good job.
My trick was to lowball it this time.
Yeah, there you go. now you're thinking with capitalism.
The $200 is like if I made 1 cent per word. So
there you go. The thing is to build up a backlog, right? And you can start selling bundles and all that other stuff. That's how you do it.
Yeah,
right? I'm doing Roleplaying Public Radio. As always.
Keep on keeping on.
It keeps on keeping on. Let me just show you real briefly the YouTube channel that we're doing. That I found an app that like automates turning podcasts into video files. I'm going to do this Leto Narrative Dissidence as well.
We all got pictures of ourselves with various facial expressions that will the plan is to just intersperse them randomly and then run that in a loop.
So you can see here we have RPPR actual play, and I'm just posting like an episode every hour until we catch up, and it's been going for months. It's only 654 videos.
My God, it's your magnum opus.
It just keeps going. It just keeps happening into the night. Subscribe. I'll be done this month. It'll catch up by this month. It's been going since like August.
That's so much.
This isn't even everything. it just keeps happening. But you go on here and you can see the Megali C2. Yeah, like little got a little intro, and then it's just the podcast, but now you can listen to it on YouTube because YouTube has a billion people on it apparently. So gotta go where the audience is. Got a little art. Yeah. That's what we're all working on for right now. And we'll have the podcast or the Kickstarter March 4th.
What a great date to start something. March 4th.
Yeah, there we go. We're going to march 4th,
my minions.
Show these men of will.
All right, cool. Well, thank you all for hanging out. Oh, wait, we're going one last question. Any idea when the next Delta Green episode is going up on the Arc Dream YouTube? Killing Field, the Arc Dream Killing Field thing was ended. Shane, ask Shane Ivy at Arc Dream. I finished that. Yeah, it was starting to get good, but that's another podcast I did for Arc Dream last year. Anyway, thank you all so much. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.